Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham SC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show. Are you still smiling after Saturday? Because I sure am. But focus this weekend turns to Wolves at Molineux. Can we build on that fantastic opening day for our first away game of the season? Loads to discuss today. A final word from Saturday's brilliant performance against Jurgen Klopp's men. Disappointing news that Manus Solomon has picked up an injury. It looks like Issa Diop's transfer is imminent. It might even have come out by the time that you listen to this podcast. Plus, in part two, we're going to be speaking to Sarah and Amelia from the newly formed Fulham Lilies, a group for female Fulham FC supporters. Going to be great to hear all about the fantastic work that they are doing. But before that, I am joined by the regular Thursday club of the Athletic UK's Peter Rutzler.
Hello. Hi, Sammy. Hi, Jack. How are we?
Good, thank you. And Jack Collins, hello.
Hello, listeners. Hello, Sammy. Hello, Peter. It's all very exciting to be back, isn't it? This is a good day. You've got a good lineup today, Sammy. I'm excited about hearing your interview. And also, yeah, this should be fun.
Yeah, it was really lovely to speak to Sarah and Amelia. That is coming up very shortly, plus all the details from them, how you can get involved with the Fulham Lilies should you wish to. Jack, let's discuss Saturday's game against Liverpool. We both met up in the Duke of Cornwall after the game. We were both very excited. We were both sharing a few pints. And what a wonderful feeling to watch Fulham FC play a game like that.
Yeah, phenomenal, wasn't it? I think that there were questions from all of us and reasonable questions, I think, across the fan base about how it was going to go this weekend. But Fulham came out battling, and I think that's what we wanted, right? There was kind of this sense that we deserved at least a point. And yet, you know, once the second goal went in, and I think especially once it went to 1-1 and we were kind of under the cosh, it kind of was, oh God, what happens here? But obviously we go up the other end, Mitrovic wins a penalty. We score it and suddenly it's like, okay, maybe it's back on. And I think that when you look at it like that and the kind of phases of the game, the way that it kind of ebbed and flowed, we were good value for at least a point, if not three, I think. Because much as there were kind of hairy moments, I think across the course of 90 minutes, it was just lovely to see this Fulham side battle and kind of go toe-to-toe. I think stylistically as well, go toe-to-toe with a side of Liverpool's calibre. I said it to you at the weekend, you know, Liverpool are probably the second best team in the world, but on Saturday, they were the second best team at the Cottage. And ultimately, I think when you look at it like that, and for Fulham to go toe-to-toe and not, you know, duck in, look, we got 4 points off Liverpool the last time we were in the Premier League, you know, let's not forget that. But that was through a very different stylistic nature, I think. You know, last time out, it was about tucking in, facing that wall. Also, it was a depleted Liverpool team, but, you know, still. You look at that and you go, okay, this is a very different side. It was the way that we fronted them up and played our own way and played our own style. And I think that was maybe the most enjoyable thing from the entire weekend.
Peter, your piece in The Athletic was all about Fulham's organisation in midfield. And you did say, Peter, before the Liverpool game, we were previewing it, how impressive Fulham looked in that friendly against Villarreal, particularly without the ball. And I remember you saying that. I thought, yeah, Peter, but it was a friendly. Like, let's not get carried away. But right you were, because everything that we saw in that Villarreal game was just multiplied by 10 by the Fulham team. We were just exceptional, particularly without the ball. Liverpool didn't have a moment's peace. And that's what your article in The Athletic covers, really, is just how impressive we were at stopping the way Liverpool play.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because it makes it very good. So thanks, Sammy. Yeah, no, they were really, really good. Really defensively well organised. And it did mirror that Villarreal game in that, you know, there was Bobby Decadova-Reed on the left, Nathan Scabano on the right. And you could see the sort of thinking going into the game. And Fulham executed it really well. You know, there were spacing between the back four and the midfield four was really good. Harrison Reed and Giappolino were excellent, screening the back four. For me, it felt like Tim Ream and Tosin Adrabaya were so well protected, both in terms of the guys in front of them, but also the fullbacks. Kenny Tetta and Anthony Robinson just glued to Luis Diaz Mohamed Salah, who were really, really quiet. So overall, you know, it was really impressive. And you can't discount the fact that Liverpool were really off colour as well, particularly with their long ball passing, partly enforced by Fulham, but also, you know, not a good day for them. But yeah, a really exceptional performance. And there were so many things to take from it that brought so much confidence. The fact that Mitrovic just scored two on the opening day as well, considering all the noise, you know, the sort of misplaced noise, I suppose, about what he has to prove and you know, what he can't do as is perceived. But just that confidence lift that gives him, confidence lift it gives the team, particularly since, you know, the discussions about bolstering the squad, getting more bodies in. You know, it's almost as if, we can play, we can compete with the very best. And also play in this style of football. You know, Fulham played with a high line against Liverpool. You know, there was a good amount of space behind Tim Ream and Tosin, and they were able to use that compact shape to stop Liverpool playing forward, to stop them really challenging Rodak. You know, Rodak had pretty little to do, especially in the first half. Second half, much busier, made some good saves, and Darwin Nunez made a big impact, didn't he, from the bench. But overall, you know, I think Fulham will take so much heart from that performance. And yeah, really encouraging, really, really encouraging that that's how the first game went, considering how defeatist I think nearly everyone was, and probably reasonably so.
Yeah, it's such a remarkable turnaround, I think, in optimism in the fan base. And well, you know, people saying, oh, can we delay the season until we sign more centre-backs? We just needed to get going, Jack. Do you think we should have won the game? Thinking back about it more now, I actually almost think, like, look, happy with a point, delighted with a point, but it was a missed opportunity almost in a way, Jack, wasn't it? Because actually, when you think back about the 90 minutes, we had so much more of it. I think the key moment where we could have won the game was obviously when Niskins hit the post at 2-0. I think if that goes in, given the way Liverpool were playing and that Fulham seemed quite effective on the counter-attack as well, I think that that could have been the game for us had that gone in.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Liverpool fans will point to the fact that, you know, there was a couple of moments. Luis Diaz fired wide. I have no idea how we managed to do that. There was a Darwin one where he couldn't, you know, Tim Ream clears it off the line. Jordan Henderson hits the bar in the final minute, although as much as I feel like Rodak had that covered. I think when you look at all of those things, they will say to you that they could have won the game as well. And I suppose that probably makes the draw a relatively fair result. I agree with you. I think if that Niskins chance goes in, I think if Niskins buries that, we'd probably win the game. And, you know, I mean, although Liverpool have taken more points from losing positions than anyone else in the Premier League in the last 3 years, so that has to be borne in mind as well. But I think it's really interesting how Darwin came in and changed the game. And actually, I think it's more kind of, this matters more towards us rather than a kind of Liverpool thing. I'm not going to go and take it down that kind of path. Actually, what interested me about this was in the first half, I thought Polinia screened off Firmino in so many different ways. Now, he was everywhere, so it wasn't just this. But Bobby Firmino dropped in so much that Polinia was basically cutting off his passing lines. It meant that there was nowhere for him to go in those spaces. And actually, when they were looking for him to drop in and link play, Polinia was cutting off those kind of angles that meant they couldn't build those triangles in the final third in the way that they normally do. And what that meant was that not only were our fullbacks excellent wide, you know, Kenny Tete on Luis Diaz and Anthony Robinson on Mohamed Salah, it also meant that we could double up on them. Because as the two main goal threats, you know, you got Tosin was able to drift over and deal with Luis Diaz, and Ream was able to help Anthony Robinson with Salah in that you can force them down alleyways that they weren't going. Soon as Darwin came on, he played far more as a traditional kind of nine and backed up against the two centre-backs. It's where both goals come from, right? One, getting across them, and two, causing havoc in the box. And it meant him playing in that kind of more forward role as opposed to dropping into the defensive midfield space, if you will, meant that Polinia couldn't really screen him as much because, you know, it would involve him basically becoming a third centre-back. And actually, that's where the problems arose from. And Peter mentioned it there. In the first half, especially, I thought the centre-backs were protected beautifully. We were able to basically mean that that kind of middle triangle of Rodak, Ream and Tosin didn't all have all that much to do, you know, for kind of most of this. When that changes, when Darwin comes on. Now, Fulham adjusted to this quite nicely, I think, because Darwin faded out of the game as well as much as he'd kind of exploded into it. But it was interesting that as soon as a kind of traditional number nine who was able to cause that kind of havoc in the box was put on, we started to struggle, I think, in terms of where we were defensively. It meant that the overlaps on Anthony Robinson, suddenly Salah is getting free down that side because he's able to play those 1-2s because he's not doubled up on. And I think that was maybe the interesting thing about this with how we kind of go forwards and what we look like, is that when there is a player who isn't necessarily a traditional number nine in that space, and we can protect the centre backs, they're really, really good at being able to, you know, fold out, fan out, and deal with wide threats. When it is someone who is just a big kind of hulking brute physical presence who's able to cause that chaos, that's when things started to get a little bit icky for us. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting kind of dichotomy with how it all panned out.
Yeah, quite a relief then that maybe Raul Jimenez not fit for Saturday.
Yes, very much so, yeah.
Peter, let's come on to some bad news that has developed since the Liverpool game. You reported on it last night. Manus Solomon with an injury. What a blow this is. A knee injury that happened in a behind closed doors match. We'll come on to that. Looks like he needs to get further assessment. The exact time frame for his absence to be determined, but I think we can be pretty sure that this is not one that he's going to be back for the Brentford game or something. This is a lengthy spell on the sidelines, similar to Harry Wilson. And what a blow, because I thought in the glimpses that we saw on Saturday looked very good. And he was the person that, you know, set Mitrovic away for the penalty. I thought his touches were tidy, albeit he arrived at a point in the game where we were much more defensively minded. He didn't have as much maybe to do as he would normally. But yeah, what a run of bad luck on the wings.
Yeah, really disappointing news, isn't it? Obviously, we'll wait to see exactly how long he is out for. I know there's been some speculation about the length of time he could be out, but if it is similar to Harry Wilson, then that is a blow. I mean, essentially, if you were to pick a Fulham first choice 11, I think you'd probably put both Harry Wilson and Manus Solomon in when they're fit. Obviously, for Solomon, it's hugely disappointing, especially after the summer and, you know, the delayed nature of the move. And then finally, the move comes through and he's able to play. And he was always going to need to build up minutes because, you know, he hadn't played competitively in club football for 6 months or so. So, as you say, he came on against Liverpool, looked bright. Obviously, as you said, made that key pass to Mitrovic before the penalty. But now has clearly picked up a knock. And I'm curious to see what this means for Fulham in terms of what they do in the market. Obviously, there's been talk about Justin Kluivert at Roma. But it feels like a more pressing issue. Obviously, Bobby Decker, Dover Reed and Naiskins Cabano did really well on Saturday. And I was going to mention them earlier because they had to cover quite a lot of ground trying to make this system work. You know, the fact that it was so compact, the fact that if Bobby Decker, Dover Reed would press Trent Alexander-Arnold because the fullbacks were Fulham's pressing trigger, Cabano would then have to shift right over to cover the other midfielder just so that they were all screened. They did really well. That's encouraging going forward. But of course, behind them, there's not much, if anything at all. So there's Jay Stansfield and Sylvester Jasper. They'll fancy their chances maybe getting some minutes. You can play in those areas. Pereira could play in those areas. But I can't really see Anthony Knockaert and Ivan Cavallero being brought back into the fold. You know, maybe if push comes to shove and Fulham don't operate, they might have to. For now...
Surely not.
Well, they haven't been involved in pre-season, so no squad numbers either. So I'd be very, very surprised. But, you know, clearly Fulham are light on the wings now. It's a big blow.
What a mad fall from grace for someone like Ivan Cavallero, who 2 seasons ago was our starting striker. And now, even in an injury crisis, can't get a squad number to fill in on the wings. For what it's worth, I don't think Ivan Cavallero would do that bad a job. But look, Marcus Silva obviously has his reasons and sees them every day in training. Jack, I'm not a football fitness expert. And yeah, I don't exactly know the whys and the whens, but I don't understand why Manus Solomon, who has played limited football, is playing a behind closed doors friendly a day or two after playing in the Premier League against Liverpool. It's something I'd like to know the reasons why. There surely are, but I would love to have an explanation as to why that happened.
Well, I would suggest that it's about building up his minutes. You know, Peter's just made that point, I think, that he hasn't played competitive football for a long time. And he hasn't been able to, you know, play competitively. So obviously a couple of minutes off the bench against Liverpool is great, and it's great for fitness. But maybe, you know, what they wanted was to give him the other 60 minutes in a slightly less competitive environment in order that he can build up that 90-minute fitness and be able to play with it. I can completely understand that. It's about making sure that the squad, I'd imagine there's a lot of youngsters being used in these games, you know, to kind of make things happen. And it's about getting minutes in the tank for players who maybe haven't had the luxury of a full pre-season. And Manus Solomon appears to be one of those players, right? You know, I bet you that Andreas Pereira didn't play, for example, right? It is about making sure that the players who haven't necessarily had their full whack of pre-season and are at the moment, because of competitive football returning, aren't going to be able to get those minutes in fixtures because they're not ready for them yet, are probably about and ready if they're called upon. So I would suggest that it makes sense from that kind of perspective. I don't think it's that rare. It happens at quite a lot of clubs. We've seen this happen, you know, obviously Harry Wilson, and we'd have a great track record considering that Harry Wilson got injured in that behind closed doors Villa game. And now it appears that Manus Solomon has been injured in this behind closed doors Chelsea game. That it's all one of those, but we're looking at and going, okay, uncomfortable, but I can completely see why they're doing it. It's about spreading those minutes, making sure that when people are called upon, they are match fit. And I think we've just been a little bit unlucky, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, I think from your initial thoughts is, well, stop playing them behind closed doors. But look, we are not football managers or football coaches. Well, certainly I'm not, maybe for a reason. So I think I'm not going to try and oversimplify it and say that there's an easy solution, because clearly there's reasons why football clubs do certain things. Let's come on to transfer news. And everyone is talking, Peter, about Issa Diop. Obviously, this is a transfer that's been waiting in the wings for a while, but there seems to be some significant progress on Monday with an offer accepted by West Ham. I can't put my finger on the amount. I've seen everything from about 10 million to 20 million from various respected journalists. So I nicely saw that you sat in the middle at 15, which I feel like seems like a good place to be, Peter.
I mean, it wasn't a case of weighing up what everyone's gone for and just go, right, I'll just go in the middle. It can't be that far wrong. From how I understand it, it's 15 million without any add-ons. And yeah, as you said, this is one that Fulham have been following for a while. It's clearly a key target for the club. You know, Fulham had put some offers down before, suggested offers, and it felt like they weren't really getting anywhere. You know, West Ham wanted further add-ons was the last thing we reported. Not helped, of course, by the injury to Naif Aguerre, I think that's pronounced right. Maybe I've got that wrong.
Correct.
The Moroccan central defender who they signed from Rennes, that posed further questions. But then, as we saw over the weekend, according to David Moyes, Issa Diop did not make himself available for the game. And I think once that happened, I think West Ham sort of realised that he's got to move on, and they may need to bring someone else in to solve their injury problems, because they do have some issues at centre-half. So clearly this is a move that Diop wanted. Clearly it's a move that Fulham wanted. Clearly he was a key target as well. My understanding was he was having a medical yesterday at Motspur Park, so that should hopefully be announced soon, providing all the final details are ironed out and whatever else. But yeah, this is, you know, we were talking about centre-halves, getting the centre-halves in early. Obviously, it would have been ideal to do it before the Liverpool game, but Fulham have clearly stuck to their main target, and they have got him for a fee that I think they wouldn't really want to go much higher than for Diop. He's a good player. I think we talked about how in his first season or two, he was very, very impressive, attracted interest from United. And I think the last couple of seasons haven't been great. Obviously, he's fallen down the pecking order. And maybe he's another one that, you know, we'll need Marco Silva to reignite his career, really. Clearly, there's a talent there. I think he could be a good option to have alongside Tosin, and really good competition now in those centre-half positions with Duffy also in there as well now. So I think a bit of relief to get the centre-half position looking a lot stronger. And should be an interesting one to follow as well. Will be interesting to see how he adapts and how he fits into this system.
And then once Diop is here, Jack, four options at centre-back, including the newly signed Shane Duffy. Do you think that's a good place for Fulham to be with four options, or would you be more comfortable if there was also a fifth knocking about?
Yeah, I think there will be a fifth, I'll be honest. But I think that four is a good place to be. I'd also just like to make this point that I think Shane Duffy is incredibly handsome. It seems like a really good addition. So I'm actually incredibly excited.
So do I. I don't understand. No,
I'm not having any of your slander. I can't believe you picked the episode I wasn't on to start slandering national hero Shane Duffy. I'd just like to put that on record. I think he's a wonderful footballer, wonderful bloke, a very handsome man. Thank you very much.
Dan Cook, don't shoot the messenger here.
Moving swiftly on, it's one of those where, yeah, I think the four is a good number to have. And maybe we will, I think, look at one more, just in the mix of how it all pans out. Because I think we'll be looking at someone who can maybe do a little bit. There's kind of rumours out of Turkey, that we're looking at a Danish centre-back who can play both defence and defensive midfield, which is one to keep an eye on, I think. It's an interesting one. But four is good. I think we will bring in a fifth just in case of injuries and long-termers. But I feel like we're in a good place here.
And yeah, Jack, you mentioned the Justin Kluivert. I don't know why this has been slightly off my radar. Or I've been maybe thinking that this transfer feels like there's a long way to go from Roma. But what are your thoughts on Justin? Son of Patrick, I'm right in saying, right?
You are right in saying, yeah. He's had a funny kind of mix of things that have happened to him in his career. Obviously came through in that Ajax side that got to the Europa League final and lost to Manchester United and was kind of touted as a very hot prospect at that point. He moved a couple of times. He went to Roma and it just didn't really click for him over there. A really good chat with him a couple of years back, back when we were doing BL Football Ranks. And he's a lovely boy, really, really, really nice lad. He went off to Leipzig on loan for a little while. He did okay there. He went to Nice, again, not brilliant, but didn't, you know, to set the world on fire, but spent a lot of time coming off the bench. I think he's just looking for a place to call home. I like him as a player, you know. I think he's a very, very, you know, direct, tricky winger who's able to get into the box and make things happen. Now, he's not the best crosser of the ball in the entire world, but he is a smart footballer who I think Silva will really like because he presses well, presses hard, and he's the kind of player that you look at and go, okay, yeah, this makes sense. And actually, considering the injury options we've got, I'd imagine this transfer has taken a big step forward in recent times. It does look that Fulham have agreed now some sort of deal with Roma, or are very close to agreeing a deal with Roma for this one. And I think it would be a smart addition to bring in, you know, someone whose career stalled a little bit. Again, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, players with points to prove, you know, players who things haven't gone necessarily their way a little bit in the last couple of years. And, you know, he's still only 23. If he can get himself going again under a manager who trusts him and who can kind of play to his skill set, I think that he's got a good chance of making it here. So, yeah, I'm excited about the Kluivert move and I hope it comes through.
All right, we'll leave it there for part one. In part two, we're going to speak to Amelia and Sarah from the Fulham Lilies. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources, but therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. Just Sammy here, and I'm joined by Sarah Keeg and Amelia Armstrong from the newly formed Fulham Lilies. Really excited to have you guys on. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Sammy.
Amelia, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for jumping on. Sorry that it wasn't a little bit sooner. You guys have been going about 6 weeks now since you launched through the summer. And if you aren't aware of the Fulham Lilies, quite simple, a group for female supporters and allies looking to arrange meetups at matches and just generally be a safe space for women and allies to enjoy the club, unless I'm completely mistaken with the mission. Sarah, you've done now a meetup before the Villarreal game. You've got a burgeoning social media following where you're meeting different people who are willing to get involved. How did it come about setting up this group?
So Amelia is the Her Game 2 ambassador, and I'm on the Fulham Supporters Trust board. And we knew that we wanted to do something specifically for women, along with a couple of other female members on the Supporters Trust board as well. So in January of this year, we ran some focus groups with other female supporters, and we basically said, come along online and just tell us, you know, what you love about supporting Fulham and what's not so great about supporting Fulham. And the two things that came up, unsurprisingly, were toilets. That's a subject yeah. that women are always talking about. And safety and feeling safe that they could attend games on their own. So from that, we met with a couple of other female supporters groups. We met with the Lady Imps, who are Lincoln City's group, and we met with the Women of Watford, or WOW. And they just sort of said what they've been doing and what they've managed to achieve. And we just took the plunge. And we just sort of decided that this was something definitely that we wanted to do at Fulham. And since we launched officially on the 1st of July, the support we've received has just been amazing, absolutely overwhelming, from females, but also male allies as well, which is really, really important to us.
Yeah, Amelia, you obviously were also announced as the Fulham Her Game 2 ambassador last year. You did a fantastic interview or chat more with Tim Ream, which was on the Fulham website. He's absolutely lovely, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, that was an amazing experience. Yeah, he's lovely, and it was really nice to have that backing from first team players as well to say that they're here to listen about issues that the club might have with sexism in football, or just the wider scope of sexism in football. So it was a great chat with him. And yeah, he's probably one of the loveliest people I've ever spoken to. He's brilliant.
Yeah, and not too bad of a footballer either, as we saw on Saturday against the likes of Liverpool. Amelia, you've been now a few months in that role as the Her Game 2 ambassador, and obviously you've been involved in Fulham Lilies. What kind of issues have you mainly been dealing with since you started each role? What are you looking to kind of achieve in the time that you're doing this? Because there's a lot of ways that I think the female fan experience can be improved. I think that's kind of without doubt, really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the main things that I wanted when going into this role with Fulham is I wanted more awareness around the club, around how to report instances of sexism that you might experience on match day or in the ground. Things like posters up, things like anonymous numbers that you can text if you experience something, that just go to the club and then the club can deal with that internally. Things where, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, something's happened and you don't feel comfortable going and grabbing a steward and you don't want to, you know, report it there and then, you have somewhere where you can just text quickly and then, you know that the club are going to deal with it. So things like that, I think, were quite important to me. I think also just having the awareness up for Her Game 2, things like having players train in the shirt, having them warm up in the shirt, just to show people that even though we're a movement that has grown really, really quickly, we're here to stay and it's serious. And just showing, the more that we show people Her Game 2, the more people kind of think and maybe reconsider behaviours that they think are normal but actually can be quite damaging. Things like maybe chants that can be quite sexist, things that people might not think twice about but now are being made to think twice about due to the coverage of Her Game Too, things like that. And also I think alongside with the Lilies, what we've been trying to do is get some more awareness for our women's side as well.
Yes.
I mean, we have a women's team, but there's really not much advertisement going on about it. There's really not much on social media about it. So I think just showing people that we do have a women's side, they play on Sundays and their home games are at Motspur Park. So it's not exactly that far for people if, you know, they want to get involved. But what we found when speaking to people is a lot of people aren't even aware that we have a women's side. So just kind of raising that awareness for that aspect as well.
Sarah, you were talking to me before we started about the meetup that you did at the Villarreal game. How important do you think these meetups are? One thing I've always been surprised when doing Fulhamish and some of the emails we get are that there are a lot of people that want a group, want something to identify with, and they would go to more matches if they had like-minded people that they could go to matches with. So what was your experience of doing that first meetup, and how important do you think they're going to be to the Fulham Lilies going forward?
We could not believe the response that we got to the meetup at the Villarreal game. For the Lilies, there are 10 of us, so 10 co-founders of the Lilies, ranging in age from Mills, early 20s, right the way up to Tamara, who's 79, and every age in between. And it was the first time that we as a group had met. So that was great for us that we all finally got to meet in person because everything had been done online. And we thought if a couple of other people turn up as well, that would be great. We had a family turn up with their two kids, mum, dad. We had lots of young females. There was one in particular who loves football, doesn't have anybody to go with. She saw us on socials and bought herself a ticket and came along. And she was there for, you know, an hour or so. She was chatting away. She absolutely loved it. And then we all walked to the game together. And as it happened, she was sat just about three or four rows in front of me, pure coincidence. And she sort of came up at half time and went, "This is amazing. I'm just loving it. I'm having such a great time." And to get that on our first meetup was absolutely incredible, because that's what we want. We want people who, you know, for whatever reason, feel that they can't attend football, whether it's because they've got nobody to go to or whether they think they're too old to go. Or, you know, we had a South Asian woman contact us as well and said that obviously she has certain barriers because none of her family sort of are into football. So it was all these different people who contacted us and said, "Because of you, we can now consider coming to a football match."
Amazing.
"Because we know that we can come, we can meet you, and then I'm in a group, I'm in a tribe." And so it just was absolutely fantastic for us. We were absolutely overwhelmed by the support that we got. And it's all been positive. And a lot of it has been from men saying about their daughters, you know, wanting to take their daughters. And it's great that they've got now a safe space that their daughters can come along. And because of that success, we're looking to do that another meetup before the Brentford game on the 20th of August. So again, it'll be at the Tea House at Bishop's Park, who again have been very supportive of us. And we're going to be there from 1 o'clock till 2:30. Yeah, so 1 till 2:30 on the 20th of August. Yeah.
Sounds brilliant. And if you know, you had that much success at a friendly game where the attendance was a lot lower, I imagine that it's only going to go up and up for the big Brentford match. So that sounds absolutely fantastic. Amelia, what is your experience being a Fulham fan as a woman? I think a lot of people would maybe naively think that Fulham is a very friendly, welcoming club where there are no problems and everyone can come to a game and not experience any kind of intimidation or any awkwardness or kind of bad feeling towards them. Is that true? I would like to think that Fulham is a nicer club than the majority to support. But I feel like, as you alluded to, there's a lot of improvement that can be made in all areas.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, on the whole, I've definitely had, you know, far more positive experiences at Fulham than negative. And I love the club so much, from the fan base we have, from the people that work there. Everyone has been really, really receptive of her game too. I mean, you do unfortunately get a few people, and I have experienced in, you know, in the past instances of sexism, just little, from little things of just being second question in a way about your opinion, or the way in which you're perceiving the match in ways in which male fans aren't, having to kind of second, yeah, kind of questioning yourself as being like, well, I think this player played good, but if I go on social media and say they played good and other people disagree, it's going to then come down to gender in a way in which it doesn't for male fans. I think things like that, I do think that it's my experiences have definitely got better. I feel like when I was 15, 16, I experienced quite a lot of sexism from Fulham fans online, unfortunately. But I do think now, as the club's partnered with Her Game Too, and I think as the general landscape of football has changed, and female fans are becoming more and more welcome every season, I do think it's got a lot better. But unfortunately, there are those instances that have happened, which is why I just want there to be a really safe kind of anonymous reporting system for fans in place, just to ensure that these instances are getting logged and reported and people can actually action them.
Yeah. And it's almost unrelated, but it is related. Like the way that England won that final, and so many people saw it as well. And I think so many men will have watched a women's game for the first time in their lives at that point and realised, oh, actually, maybe I had my opinions all wrong here. Women can play football. And you saw Gabby Logan, Alex Scott, all the people, they can talk about football. And you're like, well, obviously, I mean, we've been saying it for years, but if it takes a watershed moment like that to change some opinions slowly but surely, and I don't think anyone's ever going to say that the battle is won, or that everything needs to stop now, equality is here, it isn't. But I really hope that can be that watershed moment. And Sarah, what else are the Lilies looking to achieve? Obviously, meetups, but also you've been trying to kind of build a social media presence as well, that hopefully will be able to kind of combine maybe not just match going fans, but also non-match going fans.
Yeah, definitely. We actually had our first international supporter who contacted us asking to buy a Fulham Lilies badge.
Hey.
So we've sent him a little pack with a Fulham Lilies badge in, and we've been contacted by quite a few female supporters in the States saying, how do we get involved, what can we do? So, and as Amelia was saying, it's for a woman, it's so refreshing. We just sit around and talk football, and there isn't that pressure that you sometimes get when you talk to men about football. Am I going to say the wrong thing? If I pronounce a player's name wrong, are they going to think, oh, she knows nothing about football? Whereas with the women, we just talk freely about football and our love of the game. And what's quite nice as well is we're looking to partner up with other women supporters groups. So whilst we have the rivalry on the pitch, we're very much female supporters, so we want to make sure that, you know, we're doing work with Her Game Too Brentford, and we've also been looking at doing something with the Arsenal women's supporters group as well. So going forward, we just want to capitalize on what we're doing at the moment, but increase it and spread it out to other areas. And we've also got some very random things, such as we want a Joe Bryan feminist book club.
Sounds perfect. I imagine he'd be up for that as well. I'm almost certain. You just got to put that ask in there. I imagine send him a tweet and he'll be more than up for it. Just quickly, let's chat football, because that's what we, and let's chat Fulham. Amelia, what did you think of the Liverpool game, and how much more confident are you now for the season ahead after watching Saturday? I definitely feel like I've got much more of a smile on my face this week than I did this time last week.
Oh, definitely same. I think I couldn't believe my eyes, to be honest. When we were 1-0 up, I was absolutely shocked. I know everyone that's sitting around me, we were all just staring at each other like, is this happening? I think even though I did feel like we won, to be honest, even though we didn't. Yeah. But just the performance we put out, I think going into that match, I kind of had the mindset that I didn't really, the result, I almost was 100% sure we'd lose that one, to be honest. So I kind of went into the match just going, I just want to see the players on the pitch and see them gel and see our new signings and see how they fit in with the squad. To get a result like that, you know, and I think the main thing for me was Mitro scoring, because I know he gets so much stick and it's so unfair about, you know, not being Premier League quality. And I know that I get it a lot from people that aren't Fulham fans. They say that to me all the time. I'm sure a lot of Fulham fans get that from people that,
yeah,
to be honest, haven't actually watched him play football. Mm. So I think for me, the main bit was just to shut everyone up that's been going on about him not being able to score in the Premier League. I'm so confident now.
And Sarah, obviously about 3 weeks left of the transfer window. What's on your wish list?
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because before the season started, we were like centre backs. We need, you know, defence because Tim's not going to cut it. But the performance that he gave on Saturday was absolutely immense. It was one of the best games. I mean, for me, last season, I thought he was the most improved player. Mm. He absolutely was fantastic last season. And I think this season, everyone was like, he's going to be making up numbers. But I thought he was fantastic. But Marco's right. You know, we're not going to be able to go through a season with the small squad that we've got. And we've seen already Wilson and Solomon are out. Mm. So I sort of think, yeah, we need some defenders to come in just to boost the squad. And I mean, yeah, after Saturday's performance, I think if you'd have asked every Fulham supporter at 12:29, what's the score? Everyone was saying around me, if we keep it to less than 5-0, I'm going to be happy. Yeah. But after that performance, yeah, I just sort of think sky's the limit with us now.
Oh, it's so exciting. I'm really hoping that it's not a big crash back to earth. Saturday at Molineux after we give the European runners up a game and then Wolves come along and just get a nice easy win. But fingers crossed that we can put the same performance levels in as we did. Sarah, probably just a good opportunity to share any of the details for how to get involved with Fulham Lilies, either on Twitter, on Instagram, or however they're best to kind of get in contact if they've got any more questions.
Yeah, so we're on Twitter, Fulham Lilies, Insta again, Fulham Lilies, and we've also got a private group on Facebook as well, if you search for Fulham Lilies. And if you want to contact us, our email, nice and easy, is fulhamlilies@gmail.com.
Amazing. Well, thank you both so much for coming on and for everything you're doing. I honestly think that it's a really inspirational thing that you guys have decided to do. And I think you're going to change the lives of a lot of Fulham fans. Sounds like you've already kind of made that start with the Villarreal game. And yeah, I really hope that the Brentford meetup goes well. I'd love to come along myself and meet you. And I know that there's a couple of Fulhamish regulars that are amongst your co-founders in Haley and Lydia as well. So really, really wish you guys all the best, and definitely go along to the Brentford meetup at the Bishop's Park Tea House before the Brentford game. Sarah, Amelia, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Part three of the Fulhamish podcast is Sammy back with Jack and Peter. Thank you so much to Sarah and Amelia from the Fulham Lilies and for all their work they are doing. Definitely get in touch with them if you're up for joining that Brentford meetup. Just before we start the questions in part three, there was a tweet from a guy called Harry Truss. He's a fan of the podcast. He's part of our Fulhamish community, and he put a message on Twitter out last night, which has been widely shared. He asked me if I could mention it on the podcast. And of course, I'd absolutely love to. So Harry is a recovering drug addict, follows Fulham home and away. He wants to set up a sober Fulham group who meet up on match days. And he wants to reach sober Fulham fans to see if there are a group of like-minded people who would like to enjoy Fulham games without going to pubs and all the things that entails. And if that is you, and maybe you would like to meet up with fellow sober Fulham fans, then definitely drop Harry a tweet at HarryTruss1. Harry spelled H-A-R-R-Y as normal, and then Truss, T-R-U-S-S-1. And we really wish Harry all the best in setting up that group. And I'm sure there are plenty of like-minded Fulham fans who would be up for joining. There's already been quite a big response to his tweets. So, yeah, all the best, Harry, and all the best with your recovery. And hopefully catch you at a match soon. Let's do some questions and some messages that we've got in just before we finish the podcast. Had this brilliant email from Mary Dunlop. And she writes, "Hello, Fulhamish. I wanted to write and say thank you. We live outside of Boston, Massachusetts in the US, but we spent August 2021 to July 2022 in London for my job, and we lived in Fulham. My family and I had never seen a professional football game, but we're looking forward to going to one during our time in London. We have two daughters, aged 6 and 8, who started doing the Fantastic Girls Skills classes with the FFC Foundation in the autumn, so we figured that we'd try out a Fulham game. We loved it so much that we immediately bought season tickets for the second half of the season. My husband got me hooked on the Fulhamish podcast, which we've both been listening to ever since. My absolute favourite episode was the one where Jack convincingly argued that Swansea's best strategy would have been not to try and score any goals. And the epic, we dream of Ream, this will catch on. I was listening to this episode on the train and started crying because I was laughing too hard. What a season it was. We're now back in the US and feeling homesick for Fulham. We watched the Liverpool game over breakfast, but felt sad to see other people in our seats at Craven Cottage. It's been a real pleasure to keep with all the Fulham news and relive the highlights while listening to the podcast. Thank you for the hot takes, the pessimistic views, and the absolute joy of being able to share in Fulham's successes, Mary." What a lovely email. Thank you so much. Glad you enjoyed the podcast, and hopefully you can make it back for a game or two later in the season and hop back from the States, and maybe you won't be able to get your seats exactly, but I'm sure you'll be able to get similar seats in the ground. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. Let's go on to a question here from Daryl in Milwaukee. He says, "Hello, Fulhamish. I have two questions. Does it appear that our best defence is going to require playing on the front foot at all times? And do you think Harvey and Fabio miss Fulham yet?" Let's start with the first question about playing on the front foot, Peter. It was my big question after the Liverpool game was that what Fulham did in that Liverpool game was so intense. It was, I wasn't even sure we were going to be able to keep it up for the 90 minutes, but we just about managed to. It's a really, really, you know, it requires such a high level of fitness to be able to keep that intense pressure for 90 minutes. I remember we saw quite a few teams at the Cottage last year try and do it against us, and they were never able to fully manage it for 90 minutes. Not only have we got to do that for 90 minutes, if that's our style of football, we've got to do it for 38 games. That's going to be very, very difficult if that's the style of football that we see every single week.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see. Obviously, we've talked about how the sense has all been Fulham aren't going to change too much about their style this year. They're going to play their way and approach each game like that. I think one thing that will be important for me will be mentality and mindset. It seems kind of strange when you think, well, it's, you know, it's fitness, isn't it? It's physical fitness, being able to perform at that level consistently. But, you know, obviously there is the run of fixtures and there's injuries and making sure that people are still able to function at their best ability. But also what was so interesting about Saturday's game was that you really got the sense that Fulham had their bit between the teeth, like everyone did, even in the ground, that sense of, right, we're going to, it sort of fed off each other, the players, supporters, really determined to show Liverpool, not to give them the respect that perhaps would have allowed them to take more control of the game. And the reason I say this is because I think when you get into the rhythm of the season, trying to maintain that focus will be really important. And I think Fulham will be able to do it because the club as a whole have a point to prove. We've talked about so many different players having points to prove. And I think having that belief that it can work, having seen it at Liverpool, and then also just did that first season back in the Premier League, that determination to show everyone that actually Fulham are pretty good, should give Fulham that lift. Now, the other thing, of course, is game state, which we sometimes talk about. You know, concede an early goal, how do you respond to that? We talked about last season that Fulham didn't always respond in the best way, but will that be different this time around? will they always need to chase games? Will they take lead in games and then have to hold on to leads? So that will play a part too. But I wouldn't be surprised, especially in the setup that we saw Saturday, to see similar things against the big teams. Fulham did that against Manchester City in the FA Cup last year. We talked about how Silva, when he was in charge at Estoril all that long time ago, would go to those big clubs in Portugal and try to beat them by playing, you know, by playing them on their terms, kind of thing. So I imagine we'll see similar. But as long as Fulham don't pick up too many injuries and can keep that sort of belief, which seems kind of abstract, but I think it is quite important, then I don't see why they can't maintain those performance levels, why they can't continue to beat different teams. Of course, different teams have different tactical setups and they'll pose different questions, and there will be times where teams will, you know, gain advantages and that will change things. It will change how games unfold. But if you can have that same impetus to, and I want to say desire, because players always do have it, but there is a real energy behind Saturday's performance. And I think if you can keep that, then I see no reason why Fulham can't maintain it throughout the season.
Moving on to a message here from Gary Wallace. He says, "Hi chaps. Yesterday," he wrote this on Sunday, "was brilliant and the atmosphere was great. Don't want to come across as some old bloke moaning. I hope this doesn't cover though the Chelsea ticket pricing, which was released quietly, and general pricing to the back of people's minds." He said, "Keep banging the drum on this. Too many lifelong fans and young fans, potential new fans, now missing out on games." He said, "There were too many Liverpool fans tourists in colours in the home areas yesterday, which had Liverpool won comfortably as expected, had the potential to kick off. Don't want to dampen the feel-good factor, but don't get me started on the half and half scarts and all the ticket touts. Much love. Keep up the good work." Jack, they released the Chelsea ticket prices. They're the exact same as the Liverpool.
Yeah.
I have got to the point where I don't know what more anyone can say on this.
Yeah.
It's still as disgraceful what they've done for the Chelsea game as the Liverpool game, in my eyes. I never expected that Liverpool was going to be a one-off, as though the club said that. The Fulham Supporters Trust are releasing the results from their survey, which they did about ticket prices. Some pretty startling, eye-watering facts in there. 62% planning to attend fewer matches, non-season ticket holders because of that. 82% of people saying they were either dissatisfied or very dissatisfied with those ticket prices. And if you look at the age ranges of people that were affected most, it was a lot more young people than old people, as expected. Coming on to Liverpool fans in the home end, it didn't seem too bad in the Hammersmith, but I heard that there was a lot in the Putney end. And that this does annoy me, because I still feel like, and Tom Graitch made a good point on the Tickets podcast, that it's harder to police this than you would initially think. And desperate Liverpool fans that want to go and see their team will go to extreme lengths in order to, you know, try and get in there, whether it's even buying a season ticket in order that they can go to that one game, is not necessarily sometimes completely out of the question.
No, especially if it's a Liverpool fan who lives in the area, right? Like, and I'm sure there are some, you know, people. Now, this is, you know, for better or for worse, and I imagine they're probably not listening to this, but I imagine there are certain people, and I imagine there are people listening to this who started off, you've been like, oh, Fulham's close, I'll get a season ticket and I'll be able to watch the big games, and slowly fell in love with the club, right? That there are elements of this that happen, and people who are like, you know, who will be Liverpool fans and will have gone to that game as kind of Liverpool fans, but for the rest of the year will support Fulham because they have a season ticket. These things aren't unheard of. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just making the point, right? And I know a lot of people, especially, you know, when we did have cheaper season tickets and cheaper tickets, who'd come along, you know, semi-regularly, despite kind of supporting other clubs. And eventually some of those people, you know, just are Fulham fans now, and that's fine. You know, that's how you grow a fan base and you grow a club. And, you know, lots of people move places and move cities, and it's, you know, important. And we have a lot of people listening to this who have kind of either fallen in love with Fulham from afar or used to live in London and now, you know, live somewhere else and support Fulham, but might go to their local club as well. You know, it's, I know it's a little bit different in terms of two clubs in the same division or even the same country, but you know, I don't think that's, you know, unheard of, and I think it's easy to sit here and judge.
I think it's when you have the people in colours, and I, you know, saw for both the Liverpool goals, you quite clearly saw fans celebrating in the home end of the Putney stand. Now, yes, they'd obviously try to sit as close to the Liverpool fans as far as I could tell as possible, but it's still, I just don't see how there isn't more of a usage of like loyalty points for these home games. Like, you would sell out these home games to Fulham fans. I don't understand why there
you
is
would
not
if you
more
put them at a reasonable price point. Yeah. But yeah, I'd agree. Right. This is all true. And I think there is also going to, there is going to be this year a hangover, right, from the legacy of the neutral stand in inverted commas, right? Mm. There's going to be that hangover where people are like, you know, and I spoke to my aunt about this, right? And she's Brentford. And she was saying, well, why is there only this many tickets? We normally have more than this. And I was like, you don't. You just normally were able to buy them in the next bit along anyway. And so I think that actually, and I think it's a really interesting point that, and Dean and I were talking about this, it felt like the Liverpool fans were quieter than they usually were. And actually, weirdly, I remember a couple of years back, it was, we were talking about it. Steven Gerrard scored a penalty in the 90th minute. We were bottom of the league and we didn't win that game, but we should have got a point out of it. Yeah. And it felt like the Liverpool fans were trying to suck the ball in, you know, from that whole Putney end that was just a wash of red. Yeah. And it felt like the ability to kind of take over that stand and the ability, you know, we've seen it with Leeds, we've seen it with Liverpool, we've seen it with United, we've seen it with most of the London clubs as well, who come in and go, right, if you're going to give us these seats, we'll take them. Absolutely, no problem at all. And it makes that atmosphere at that end, not only is it horrible to watch it, you know, go off when an opponent team scores, sure, but it also means it's much louder than it needs to be. And I remember Leeds on a, you know, Tuesday night midweek having the entire Putney end. And I think the fact that it's no longer that is a good thing, because it meant that that effect is minimized a little bit. You know, I thought that Liverpool were less loud than they normally are at the Cottage. I felt like Fulham were louder. And part of that is the acoustics returning, with the, obviously having, you know, sound on all four sides. But part of it is not just giving up an entire stand to away fans. And so I think there is going to be a legacy of hangover of that, but it will minimize. And actually, I think it was important that that was minimized over the course of the game. And actually that was a good thing.
My thing with the ticket prices and Chelsea is that I was very impressed with those prices, for instance, against Brighton. And for me, that has always felt a bit more important than the pricing of those massive games. Look, no one's saying that I'm happy with £65, £70 for those big games. But if we can get those prices for me in the games that are coming up in September, October, I think we've got Newcastle, Bournemouth coming to the Cottage in October. I'll be interested to see what those prices are, because we're still kind of learning this as we go. Clearly that A-plus category is going to be horrible. And I think we've made our point and protested about that. But Brighton was good. I want to see more Brighton prices. That would be the lovely thing for me. And we're going to just have to adapt to this. We're certainly not going to batten down about it. There is an element of, you know, feel-good factor at the moment and not wanting to bring down the mood by talking about things like ticket prices. But certainly, Gary, we'll try and do our best not to just shut up about it just because, well, Fulham have had one good game. let's see how things go. And let's look ahead to the future and let's see if we can keep that feel-good factor going. 3 o'clock kickoff against Wolves on Saturday at Molineux. Peter, Wolves had a difficult opening day, took the lead at Elland Road, ended up losing 2-1. Wolves are a funny one at the moment. I can't quite put my finger on what they're trying to do under Bruno Lage. They had really good periods last season. They still got a reasonable finish, but ended the season quite badly. That's a bit of a blow to lose the way they did to Leeds on the opening day. Raul Jimenez still injured. Connor Cody now gone to Everton. Difficult one to predict this, because I just don't know what Wolves are doing, but obviously a trip to Molineux, their first home game of the season, they'll be desperate to make amends for what happened at Elland Road. This is going to be another really, really difficult game for Fulham, and I'm certainly not going in there thinking, oh, we played brilliantly against Liverpool, so this is 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right about Wolves being in a strange place. And actually, the more you think about it, I actually think this is quite an important game because Wolves seem like they have the potential to struggle a little bit more than I thought that they would. Maybe that's a bit presumptive. I know we're early in the season, but as you said, you know, back end of last season was not good. Like it was, they were pretty poor after a very, very good start. I know Bruno Lage moved to a back four, if I remember rightly, Jack, yep. Is that right?
Yeah. That's why they've sold Connor Cody.
Yes, which also feels really strange. And I know Connor Cody is very good in a back three, but he is Mr. Wolves, isn't he? Like, he is Wolves. So, I don't know. Bruno Lage was very tetchy on the touchline, wasn't he? Had that tete-a-tete with Jesse Marsh.
It was really weird. Like, really uncomfortable.
First half, he said. Yeah, it was...
He was like, there are things that shouldn't be said on the touchline. I was like, all right, mate, get out.
Yeah, interesting. So, the more you think about it, the more you think, actually, for Fulham, this is quite an important game and potentially an opportunity. You know, the squad doesn't have the best depth. Obviously, they don't have Jimenez. They still have their threats in wide areas. You know, Podence and Neto. Neto looked really sharp in pre-season. Of course, it's going to be a difficult challenge, but there's certainly an opportunity for Fulham there if they can get in early and make it difficult. I'm looking forward to it because, yeah, it's going to be a good one. Another hot one as well, by the looks of it as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a warm, difficult journey to the Midlands without regular train services. If you didn't catch Dom's podcast the other week, there are ways of getting there. Involves a long train to Moore Street, and then I think you can get from New Street to Wolves, or you can go via Reading on the trains. I'm just jumping in a car because I can't be bothered. It's going to be a long, sweaty journey up to the Midlands. Jack, what's your take on Wolves? They've made some sensible signings. I think Nathan Collins from Burnley is an under the radar good signing because I always thought he was one of those that never quite got the credit he deserved. But it also doesn't.
young man Shane Duffy.
Looks or ability?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Nathan Collins is excellent, man. Really, really good. He's a very, very good player. He's kind of. Struggling a little bit in terms of where it is, but what he does, because I think last season he didn't quite, you know, get that breakout, but obviously made from Stoke, went to Burnley, had that moment, and is now at Wolves. I think he'll thrive. He's a lovely ball playing centre back. He's done really well for the Republic. I think he's a good reason as to why Wolves have switched to a back four, to be perfectly honest with you, because I think that kind of suits his style, suits his game. And it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out for him this season. It's a weird summer. Obviously, Wolves still lacking a striker, really. Got Hwang, but I mean, played more as a wide forward, during his time at Red Bull. And I think maybe has struggled a little bit in that role. They definitely need backup. They've sent Fabio Silva off to Anderlecht on loan. And Raul Jimenez seems to be struggling for fitness. So I think this is all, positive for Fulham in many ways. That said, it's still a very good side. I think Bruno Lage is a good manager, even if he is a bit tetchy. And I think that Wolves will probably be okay this season across the course of it. But I agree with Peter in that if you can get them into a bad run and you can get them into a funk early doors, they are the kind of people that won't hang around in terms of trying to fix things. So it's possible that you can force Wolves into moves if you make them struggle to begin with. And hopefully Fulham can do that at the weekend. I think it'll probably be a 4-3-3 from them, which means that we can probably employ the same tactics. And there's a kind of miniature narrative backstory in the fact that they were the ones who originally were trying to sign João Paulinho, obviously. So if he has an absolute stormer against them, I imagine that will really wind them up. Let's hope for that.
This has the vibe of Jaded Lover, but Connor Cody, actually talking to TalkSport this morning about his Wolves exit, he said, "Pre-season has been tough. The last 5-6 weeks have been really tough, to be honest. I got a vibe something's coming here. Something's not right. I could sense things. Something was happening. It didn't feel the same." I mean, it sounds the start of some sort of detective thriller novel, Peter, those sentences, but... yeah, maybe kind of backing up what we said. Maybe not a bad time to be playing Wolves.
Yeah, I mean, those comments don't exactly fill you with confidence if you're a Wolves supporter. But then again, Connor Cody is looking to play, isn't he, before the World Cup, so to get those minutes in. So, yeah, maybe.
I think there's only so much you can read into it.
Yeah.
Also, you only have to read Marco Silva's comments 10 days ago and you think, oh, it's a good time to be playing Fulham. I think you can read into anything. It's not exactly like Fulham are devoid of problems ourselves. Just one good game does not paper over all of the cracks here. And Jack, as you said, you know, look at that lineup that played against Leeds. You've got Jose Sarr in goal, Johnny, Nathan Collins, Kilman and Ait Nouri at the back, and then you've got that midfield, Dendonka, Neves, Pedence, Morgan Gibbs-White. We saw him tear us a new one for Sheffield United at the end of last season, Pedro Neto, and then Hwang, as we mentioned. That is a very good Premier League team who have got plenty of experience. So I'm certainly not just expecting that Fulham are going to go to Wolves and naturally get a result, but fingers crossed that we can. And that'll do for today's podcast. If you're heading up to Molineux on Saturday, see you there. Fingers crossed Fulham can get a result. I think there's still some tickets. It'd be amazing if we could get a really good atmosphere like we did at Liverpool for our first away day of the season. This definitely feels like one where a bit of backing for the lads could go an awful long way. So if you're on the fence about going, definitely try and go if you can. But obviously, it's a nice warm weekend. You might have other plans. If not, then I'm sure you'll be backing the lads from home wherever you're watching. We just need to name the podcast. As ever, we're going to the Fulhamish community for our podcast names on the Thursday Club this week. There's some corkers here, Jack and Peter, so I'm going to read some out and you guys can pick between you what you think is best. First one from Harry, which was "Pitch was dry." After Jurgen Klopp's comments. Timothy Higgins with "Another winger clipped."
Nice. Nice. Very clever.
Matthew Morris, "Wings diopping out."
Nice.
Okay.
Avas with "It's another injury." our own Farrell Monk with "Behind closed sores."
Good stuff.
That's good.
I think they are the best three. Oh, Nev said "Is a kind of Fulham" as well. What are you thinking here?
"Behind closed sores" is good. Yeah, it's very good. Another "winger clipped" is good as well.
Yeah, I thought "wings diopping out" as well was quite good. What's the unanimous decision here?
I don't think there is one. That's the key thing where we three of us say three different things.
All right, Jack, what's your decision?
I'm going to go "another winger clipped." That's clever.
Peter?
I was going to say the same as Jack. "Another winger clipped." Yeah.
Well, there we go. There's a unanimous decision. So it is Timothy Higgins. Thank you for your names, and get on the Fulhamish community if you want to suggest names for the Thursday Club. A nice, enjoyable added element to this season. This will catch on. Hasn't gone anywhere, by the way. We're just waiting for a few more submissions. It's been a bit quiet in the inbox. If you have any good ones, particularly for some of the new players, Polinias, well, I would say Solomon, but not much point. Diop, please do send them in. hello@fulhamish.co.uk. We're taking a few weeks off of it and get them in before Fulham start losing games when it suddenly won't be so fun. So still accepting submissions for this will catch on though for future episodes. Thank you very much to my guest today, Jack Collins. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sammy.
And Peter Rutzler, thank you.
No, thank you, Sammy. Always a pleasure.
And we will see you at Wolves on Saturday. Let's hope we can get that first W of the season. Wouldn't that be absolutely glorious? But until then, enjoy the sunshine. On your whites.
You ate.